first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best foot, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Monday, April 22nd, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, you've had a busy day with the children. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm tired, man. Matt was recording with the guys from Atlanta for a segment that you'll hear later called Know Your Enemy. And, you know, the East Coast mountain time switch is always a little challenge for me because I'm old and lame. But today the kids are on spring break because it's Passover. So that means that I get to, make a lot of food that, really constricts your bowels in really terrible ways because that's what matzah does. For those of you who are not aware of the, gut wrenching capabilities of unleavened bread. And then every year I also get to break out the one kosher for Passover bottle of hard alcohol that I own, which is called Slivovitz, which is plum-based brandy, and it's terrible. I mean, drinking straight turpentine would probably be better. But I take it out every year, and I drink it, and I'm like, oh, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of this. This bottle, Matt, it's like, it's moved from like five cities around the country with me, and it's still got at least a third to go. Because every year I pour myself a shot, I drink it, and then I go, that is terrible. And then I put it away for the rest of the year. So that's what's going on with me. Okay. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. We talked about this off pod, but I will not be in the United States this week as of Wednesday. I have a great uncle going back to the Irish side of the family who still is in England. He lives in Worthing. And it is his 90th birthday this coming week, so I'll be going to see him. And we've talked offhand a few times, Mark, about how my mom has organized some family excursion to Europe or some other place that is interesting in a soccer sense, and it just so happens to coincide with no real opportunities happening. And I gave my mom an ultimatum the last time that happened, and I said, if this is happening, like, there needs to be something soccer-related, and I don't care if we're in Greece when the big derby between Panathinaikos and Olympiakos is happening, and I go and I might get stabbed by a member of the junta, I am going and I am doing one of those things. And guess, Mark, who is hosting Cardiff City in London this coming Saturday?
No idea. Who's that?
Fulham Football Club. London's original.
That's right, and they're both in the Premiership this year, right?
Yes.
Cardiff is about to go down, right?
And potentially Fulham could be the ones to grab them and pull them down through the moon door that is EPL relegation, just as they are falling in as well. That's a Game of Thrones reference that you don't understand, probably, Mark.
No, I get that reference because I've listened to Men in Blazers, and they make the same reference about the bottom trapdoor of the EPL, but... the only reason I knew that Cardiff were at the bottom was because I was starting to do some preliminary research as to possible defenders that the Rapids could go out and get. And I always think that the Rapids have a shot of taking a player off of a team that's about to get relegated. So
please,
I was looking.
Please say who I think you're saying right now, Mark.
I was looking at Huddersfield, and seeing which players from Huddersfield might help out the Colorado Rapids, and the answer is I don't think anybody could help the Rapids right now, but we'll see. That's a whole other topic for weeks from now when we're starting to think about the transfer window, although that's a whole other question as to whether there's anything that can be done at the transfer window that would fix this team.
Well, Mark, the current transfer window hasn't closed yet. The primary transfer window doesn't close until May 7th. Aha!
Yeah, but most European teams have to, like, cut a player in order for the Rapids to bring a player in. And it's complicated, and you know that. But basically, like, right now, not a lot of players can come in unless they're really bad. That's generally, if you've missed the winter transfer window for Europe, you're only getting other people's basically dross. They're driftwood. That's the word I was looking for. It's late.
Okay, so that's a no on Tim Ream to the Rapids, Mark.
Tim Ream wouldn't help. I mean, he's an outside back. So he plays
out of the back. Who's mobile?
Yeah, I mean,
he's a good right 1v1 defender.
We don't need a guy who's really good at passing the ball out of the back. We need a guy who can defend. And
which
I mean,
is something Tim Ream can do significantly better than any current center backs on the Rapids, I guarantee.
Yes. No, I mean, Colorado needs two center backs, though. That's the thing. It's like, you know, Tim Ream and Court Ford would probably be pretty decent back
boom,
there.
We
don't have the money for Tim Ream, though.
Yeah, that's true.
He'd go through allocation also.
Are the Rapids high in allocation with how far they finished in the bottom?
I thought we were one, but the other day didn't somebody need allocation to get a player who had gone out and then come back in? Was it Toronto? Somebody. And they went for second in allocation and they bypassed the Rapids. I have to Google this now. Damn it, you're making me do work, Matt. But anyway, it's like, yeah, I think we should be number one in allocation unless we traded it and I don't know.
Okay.
MLS rules make it difficult. They make it difficult, Matt.
That they do.
Anyhow.
Okay, shall we?
You keep talking.
Okay, shall we get into the bad stuff from Saturday?
I mean, we always are getting into the bad stuff from Saturday. Every week is the bad stuff.
Indeed.
I can answer a previous question before we do that, though.
Okay, go for it.
The current allocation order is Toronto FC is at the top because they made a trade to get there, and the Colorado Rapids are number two in allocation order. And I think that happened because on December 10th, Toronto made a trade with San Jose in order to get the allocation spot. And why they did that, I don't know. And then how did the Colorado Rapids lose the first spot in allocation?
Well, allocation is based on supporter shield standing from the previous year. So San Jose would have been number one anyways.
There you go. Bingo. Very smart. Okay, thanks. Yeah, but okay. It takes a team full of lawyers and soccer nerds in order to figure this out. And I'm really only one of those two things. So.
Okay, then. All right. Tim Ream to the Rapids. You heard it here first, folks. Okay. Listeners, this past Saturday at, I think it's called StubHub Park now. I can't remember where. In Bridgeview, Illinois, where the Chicago Fire play, the Chicago Fire defeated the Colorado Rapids by a score of 4-1. Nemanja Nikolic scores on a fantastic whipping cross from Nicolas Gaitan in the 34th minute. Kai Kamara gets the Rapids back off of a corner, off of a punch out from goalkeeper David Osted that goes straight into Kai Kamara's head, and then from Kai Kamara's head into the back of the net. In the 53rd minute, Tommy Smith makes a big gaffe, and CJ Sapong gets on the end of it. Jordy Mihailovic dunks on Tim Howard in the 61st minute, and then Alexander Katai, with, for my money, at least a goal of the week candidate, with a fantastic curling shot after he cuts inside. The Rapids with not a whole lot of ideas offensively in this game, Mark. You also had a lot of wind and not the best surface for them to try and play through, to play up the middle of the park on the ground. And then you had a lot of really, really bad plays from the center back position that ultimately downed the Rapids again, who are now on pace to possibly give up almost 100 goals in MLS play. The Rapids are bad. They played a bad team that made them look very, very silly. Do you have any good things from this past week's loss to the Chicago Fire, Mark?
Anything? Did anything good happen?
Kai Kamara
scored. They had a 20-minute spell where they looked like they were doing really, really well. For the first 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the game, kind of like last week, they came out and they looked really organized and they looked really solid. And I guess that's it. But like, the fact that all I can say about the soccer team that we love and root for and have been, you know, obsessed with for years, is that they played 20 minutes of a 90-minute game and they didn't look like dog crap is damning by faint praise, as they say. So, what do you think, Matt?
I mean, if nothing else, you know, get the ball to Kai Kimura and good things will end up happening. You know, so that's maybe my one positive thing that I saw. A little bit disappointed in Sam Vines and his positioning, particularly on the second goal, but I don't really have anything else positive to say about this. The only time that I noticed Kellen Acosta in the game was when he was subbed out for Sam Nicholson at halftime. Didn't really notice Nicholson a whole lot, just not a whole lot for this team going offensively, and inevitably, as the game goes along, the team was going to make defensive mistakes, and it was just a matter of the opponent taking advantage of them, and pretty much everybody who the Chicago Fire care about and, you know, have significant offensive responsibilities did something good offensively in this game. Nikolic with a goal, Gaetan with two assists, CJ Sapong with a goal and assist. You know, everybody who we talked about last week who is going to be in offensive danger got on the score sheet in some capacity, and the Rapids really didn't do anything to the other center back. They didn't trouble Ostedt a lot significantly, and you know, all of it Bastian Schweinsteiger really had to do was jog around and not let Kai Kamara get more than 5 yards away from him, and they were able to clear things out. You know, if Ostedt does a better job punching that ball out, we're probably talking about a 4-0 game, and that's not very good. Where specifically do you want to start with some of the other bad stuff, Mark?
I mean, the defense is garbage. Our back, it's, you know, I really want to, when I look at a game, I want to tactically figure out, like, what was going wrong that allowed this to happen. And I want to talk about positioning, and I want to use advanced metrics. And this season, I haven't really needed to do a lot of deep analysis and advanced metrics, because the simple fact is, like, Kofi Opari was out of position or got beat on the third goal. He was in a bad place on the second goal. Sam Vines, as you mentioned, was floating high and inside, which required Tommy Smith to cover kind of deep and outside on the second goal, and he didn't do it, so he gave up that goal. Jack Price got sent off, which for a second yellow, or no, sorry, they rescinded the yellow and gave him a red for a scissor tackle in the 85th minute, which was totally boneheaded. And now we don't have him, which for better or for worse, like, he's basically our best defender. And if it weren't for Tim Howard coming up big in the 92nd, they would have given up a fifth goal. You know, the defense is absolutely made of silly putty. You know, it's silly putty is tougher than our defense. Made of silly string. It's made of gack. It's made of liquid cheese whiz. I mean, like, it's the most, you can get through everybody on the defense. Like, you know, there were weeks when I call out Keegan Rosenberry. I mean, he wasn't terrible this week. They didn't run a lot of offense to his side, but, like, neither did he step in and make any game-saving tackles or emergency things. Like, you know, say what you will about Jared Watts, but he would come in with a flying emergency tackle, like, at least once or twice a game, or at least, you know, every other week. Sometimes in one or two seasons, those were often mistimed and so on. But, like, right now we got nothing. Like, and I know that we have this conversation often, but, like, why Anthony Hudson isn't starting Axel Schoberg over any of these knuckleheads? I mean, Schoberg had one good season in Major League Soccer. None of these other chuckleheads who are getting run out there have even had one good season in Major League Soccer. Like, none of them have earned the right. And I'm sure Hudson sees training and says, oh, you know, these guys were good at training and that's why. But, like, that's garbage to me. Like, I don't know. That being said, like, I don't know that, you know, Axel would have been the difference maker in this game. Like, one good backliner doesn't change anything. And then the last thing that I'll add to this is, like, as much as the blame falls almost 100% on the defensive line. And by the way, if you haven't already read the comments by Benny Fellhaber, like, took out the big whomping stick. And I mean, you know, he wasn't that tough, but he basically said, like, you know, we're doing the best we can, but we need the guys on the back line to step up or we're going to lose. Like, you can't, if the midfield and the strikers were as good as they possibly could be, they still weren't going to score four goals on the day. You know, if the midfield could give a little bit more defensive support, there were, at least two plays where, the incoming pass wasn't closed down fast enough, or on the ball over the top from Dax McCarty that wound up, being the second goal. There was a pinging second ball that was batting around in the midfield. And if somebody had knocked that down and cleared it, or hadn't, you know, given Dax McCarty a chance to pop up a nice little pass, it would have been way better for the Rapids. So anyways, long story short, my God, the back line is terrible. And until they can just lock down defenders on a regular basis, there's nothing that will make this team better. Matt, yeah. What do you think?
No, I concur with everything that you just said. You know, individually to a man, they've been pretty bad. I think you can make an argument from the performances from every single player who's played on the defense that they have played their way out of a starting lineup. You know, I tweeted, you know, in my long thread that got a little bit of drum up on Twitter, you know, where I ultimately ended up saying that it wasn't Tim Howard's fault. You know, I said at this point, like, what is Anthony Hudson to do? You know, in making his selections for the back line, it's basically a choice between death by firing squad and death by poison. You know, he doesn't have any, you know, every single one of these guys has made a massive mistake. And any combination that he puts out there is capable of having a bad, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. In last week's case, it was, you know, 7 minutes against DC United, where an individual or the group collectively can single-handedly lose the game in a very, very short span of time, regardless of what minute it is or what's happened prior to that. And that has to be so demoralizing for everybody else when you get three goals against Orlando, when you get the opening goal against DC United, when you call back and have a kind of meh first half against Chicago, but you know, you go in tied 1-1 because Kai Kamara made a play and made something happen, and then they just lose it. You know, I mean, you know, the last home game, when I asked Kai Kamara about what he needs to do, you know, he said, you know, he stood up and said, you know, he has to take responsibility. I guess one goal's not enough. Like, how bad of an indictment is it on your defense when your starting striker is going out there and thinking, I need to score a hat trick or we're losing this game? I don't know what to make of it at this point. You know, I think the people who are clamoring for Sebastian Anderson or Sam Rabin to get in this game, you know, I think if either of those teenagers were an immediate, you know, savior for what's going on defensively, we probably would have seen them earlier. And you're probably setting yourself up for failure or disappointment rather, you know, with them ultimately starting. This team desperately needs Courtney Ford to get healthy, just because by the process of elimination, he has to be the best center back on this team, because he's the only one who hasn't single-handedly given up a goal this year. Who plays next to him to be a remotely competent defense, I have no idea. I'm at the point, Mark, where maybe you think I'd almost start Declan Wynn at left back, just, you know, in the next couple of games, just because the front office and the coaching staff hyped him up as that being his primary natural position, the left back position. And, you know, maybe you just tell him not to go forward in ways that Sam Vines and Dylan Serna have ultimately gotten them burned, and almost be like a third center back on that road, similar to what we saw from Court Ford at the right back position. But I don't know what to make of this defense right now. They definitely aren't going to be able to make any moves that are going to solve it, probably, you know, by the primary transfer window closing on May 7th. And I don't know how they get any better. You know, I don't think that Kofi Opare is going to wake up tomorrow and suddenly be 20% better a center back than he was last game or last year or anything. Just the performances haven't been there. And there's enough of a track record for us to say with confidence those performances aren't going to be there. And so that's a consistent, predictable thing. You know, we're watching the same Greek tragedy game after game after game. And Hudson doesn't have any of the other horses. And if you're somebody else who's doing your job, it has to be extremely demoralizing watching that happen. And just the heads go down. And like, at this point, this team's dug themselves enough of a hole to where they're going to have to be the 2016 team. In terms of points per game the rest of the way to make the playoffs. Like, the season's on life support at this point. You know, I had a tweet that I tagged to my profile just documenting the schedule they have. I'll just come out here and say it right now, Mark. If the Rapids go on to take no points and lose their next two games at Atlanta and then May 3rd hosting Vancouver Whitecaps, I will call for them to I will guarantee that they will win the Wooden Spoon in 2019. I'm struggling to see where they're going to get points from this, just knowing what's going on defensively and what the offense is going to have to do under very strenuous circumstances in order to try to get points this season. It's a roundabout way of saying that we're at the end of our leash in terms of coming up with creative and new ways of describing how bad this team is.
Yeah, I mean, you made a really good point about the fullbacks, about what, talking about Declan Wynn and putting him in there and giving him a different responsibility. One important question that's really valuable for us to talk about on this podcast, Matt, is the thing that everybody on Twitter and Reddit and Facebook are talking about amongst Rapids fans, which is firing Anthony Hudson and asking the question, how much of this is Anthony Hudson's responsibility? There's no way that you can look at two center backs playing as badly as the Rapids center backs did in the last game and then blame the manager for the individual failures that they made. That being said, the fullbacks in this game, once the team fell behind, were doing what Anthony Hudson has asked them to do all season and at the end of last season, although particularly this season, which is push high and be aggressive. And that's not working, and it's causing strain on the back line that you never used to see for the Rapids. And it's also, you know, the midfielders aren't able to compensate. So, like, it's really, I think I made this point like six games ago and it hasn't changed, which is the fullbacks come up. I mean, the second goal that Chicago scored was a perfect example of this, but the fullbacks come up. They're starting to get into the attack. Somebody in the midfield drops a little bit deeper, but not necessarily to the right side or not necessarily deep enough. And then if the Rapids turn over the ball, you switch the field, you hit a long diagonal into the space where one of the fullbacks is missing. Nobody's there. And in goal two's situation, Tommy Smith steps up to his defender and absolutely blows it completely. Misses the ball and gives his man a free run onto goal. But that doesn't happen if you haven't already sent Sam Vines up. So how much of it is Sam's fault for not getting back? And how much of it is Anthony Hudson's fault for creating a tactical plan which has an obvious chink in the armor that every team in the league has figured out how to exploit? And I can't even imagine how Atlanta's going to humiliate us this week. I mean, Joseph Martinez has a reputation for getting right between both your center backs and, like, gutting them. Now, Frank DeBoer hasn't been doing that this year with him, but, like, you know, Julian Gressel's going to absolutely go around the outside on the Rapids and humiliate us. I mean, Gressel's going to whip in crosses that are completely unmarked, and somebody's going to get on the end of those, and it's going to be embarrassing. And again, that's not necessarily the defender's fault. That's probably the manager's fault.
I think it's an interesting question. I guess the thing that I would respond to is, you know, how many of the minutes that have been assigned this year are by players who were ultimately brought in by the current regime? You know, the team made a whole bunch of changes going into Hudson's first year. They thought they had a really good idea in terms of what to do at right back. That didn't pan out, mostly with Marlon Harrison being injured and then just not really fitting into the role. And then they brought in a guy, you know, in Keegan Rosenberry, where that was more of his natural position and he could be comfortable. But Tommy Smith was an Anthony Hudson signing. They chose to bring in Kofi Opare. You know, every single guy on this defense, with the exception of Courtney Ford and Axel Schuberg, I believe, and, you know, Dylan Cerner with an asterisk there because he hasn't always been, you know, a left back for the team. Like, the entire defensive core is somebody who either Porrick Smith or Anthony Hudson signed off on, or they both, or one of them brought it up and the other said yes, and they did that. So, you know, I can't fault, you know, I understand that Anthony Hudson can't physically go out there and defend for his center backs, but these were his guys. This is his team now. You know, Danny Wilson has been one of the most fantastic busts as far as TAM center backs in the history of targeted allocation money in MLS, and that was a signing this front office made. You know, if Hudson had come in the, you know, right at the end of, if Hudson had been named the caretaker manager in 2017 after Mastroianni was fired, who the Rapids are still paying, as we have discussed ad nauseum, and one of the main reasons why Mark and I are skeptical of Hudson being fired, because then you have to pay three coaches simultaneously, yada, yada, yada. You know, then I can understand, because it wasn't his roster, but he made a whole bunch of changes, and he brought in a whole bunch of his guys in the midfield on the defense. There were two guys who maybe didn't work last year, one of whom wasn't immediately, you know, his decision, in Stefan Aigner last year, and then they completely shuffled out the offensive core. You know, who here has, you know, who, what percentage of the minutes that have been played this year are by guys who were not a Porrick Smith as the general manager signing on the dotted line, or Anthony Hudson telling Porrick to go get me this guy? So regardless of what's going on the field, that some, we have to blame somebody in the front office because of how this roster was assembled. You know, if it's not the player's fault because they are bad, then you have to blame how, I, like you mentioned with the fullbacks, either in some capacity how they are being coached, or in some capacity the person who ultimately decided that they should go to the club. And if we want to extend it up there, we could say that, you know, the Rapids are not the most expensive team in MLS. So, you know, there's blame pie to go all around, but I don't think, you know, Hudson just coming in there and just simply saying that, oh, all of my center backs are bad, when one of them hasn't played because he's injured, and the other one, you know, you benched at the beginning of last year and then has made a bunch of terrible mistakes this year. Like, these were your guys. These are the ones that you brought out. You know, as Jeff Casimir pointed out to us, you know, on Twitter this week, you know, Danny Wilson is making the same amount of money as Chad Marshall, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, would you rather have Chad Marshall, or would you rather have, you know, Danny Wilson? You know, I guess the exercise I would ask Mark is, you know, let's throw out Axel and Cork because they're proven in MLS, and let's throw out Keegan Rosenberry. Of the foreign guys who've come in, you know, if Danny Wilson or Tommy Smith were plopped on to every single other team in MLS, where would they be on the center back depth chart? And, you know, at the end of the day, that's Hudson and Warwick Smith pulling the strings in terms of who they brought in. And if those players are failing, then on some level, it has to be the fault of how the coach is using them, or the people, Warwick Smith and Anthony Hudson, in choosing to bring them in. Let's move on to big thing, Mark. Is there anything that we haven't already discussed at this point?
I mean, the big thing is basically what I said, which is that the which of the challenges is down to the lack of individual talent of individual players, meaning the construction of the roster by Porrick Smith, and how much of it is down to Anthony Hudson moving pieces around in a haphazard and dangerous way and being outmatched as an MLS coach. And that's a hard thing to say. And it's a hard thing for me to think about, because I liked the idea when it was presented. I liked the idea of the 4-4-2 diamond. I liked the idea of what we call the modern fullback, which is using fullbacks as offensive pieces. And maybe it's that these players can't execute it, but it's also clear that the manager is going to take the blame for that. So that's the big thing for me, especially as we're moving into the phase of, you know, I started to go on a long Twitter rant this week as I was trying to put together statistics and numbers to frame, like, what should we be thinking right now? And what we're thinking is this: the team, hypothetically, I did this last year too, which is do a lot of counting in the middle of the season to see whether I should even emotionally be invested in this team at all at this stage anymore. But the team at this stage needs to win the next three games, or there's basically no way back. Which is kind of insane to say in both directions. One, to say that they could possibly win three games and then there would possibly be a way back. But like, Seattle basically did it, you know. Seattle had 11 points after 12 games, or 12 points after 11 games in 2016, and went on to win the whole darn thing.
Seattle also had one of the best goalkeepers in MLS, one of the best center backs in MLS, a proven roster that just had really been hurt.
No doubt.
And then they had a coaching change, and then they brought in one of the most impactful number 10s of the current era of MLS. All things of which the Rapids do not have or do not seem plausible between now and the end of the secondary transfer
window. Right, but just talking about the hypothetical, can you come back from really far down? The answer is not if you don't win these three games, because if you don't, then you're now sucking yourself up to try and get create the greatest comeback in MLS history only 3 years after the last greatest comeback in MLS history. So, and I don't see them going to Atlanta and getting points, even though I think it's a better chance than going to Vancouver and getting points. I really don't think that they're going to beat Vancouver. So, you know, that's really hard to, it's really hard to stomach to say, one, you know, hypothetically, we need to win three games, but there's no evidence that we would do that. And two, to say, like, not even hypothetically, but like statistically speaking, this team is out of the playoffs and it's not even, May yet. It's an insane thing to say. And it's an insane thing to contemplate. Like, what does DSGP look like in June when there's nothing to play for?
No, it's a really good question, Mark. I'll echo your point for one of my big things. I've got two. I'll just reiterate my point of, you know, if, let's say the Rapids lose to Atlanta and then it's actually a home game, in the first game of May against Vancouver. So if they lose the next two games, I will put out on Twitter and I will stick to a guarantee that the Rapids will win, in air quotes, the 2019 Wooden Spoon and actually be even more of a disappointment, both in expectation and in actual performance and results, than the 2018 season that I don't think that we saw was, you know, that was not in the realm of possibility for me. For me, this year was about, could they make progress? Could they be, you know, there and present and relevant in July and into August? And could we see some inkling that they've improved in some way? And they've done a lot of really, really good things on the offensive side of the ball, but they've retracted almost as much as they've done on the defensive side of the ball. You know, at the very least with Pablo Mascherini, you know, it's basically a flip of, you know, they're doing really good things offensively that's above average in MLS, and they're one of the worst teams defensively. And for Pablo, it was the other way, where they were one of the really good defensive teams but had no idea what they were doing on the offensive side of the ball. I guess the difference was is that Mascherini clearly cared about the club. You know, he talked a big game at times that was at least entertaining for the fans. He had a fantastic mustache that I am, you know, hopelessly trying to emulate and growing out, you know, my beard and my mustache and goatee combination. And he was doing it with one of the cheapest rosters in MLS, you know, where, you know, based on some of the players that they've replaced, you know, the Rapids are going to be about mid-table in terms of spending. And, you know, they're playing far worse than the Houston Dynamo and Sporting Kansas City, both of whom have, you know, less of a budget to work with than they do. And then the other point that I'll have that, you know, I alluded to that I was drumming up on Twitter is just anybody who's keeping this all on Tim Howard, you are not watching the games, you're not looking at the stats, and you're definitely not seeing the forest through the trees. Going into the game on Saturday against Chicago, American Soccer Analysis had Tim Howard's goals minus X goals against at negative 0.42, meaning that he'd given up 42 hundredths less of a goal than you would have expected the average MLS goalkeeper to give up. Granted, you know, you have to take into account sample size of that only being part of the season, and we don't know yet, because they haven't updated their numbers, where he is, you know, after giving up four goals on Saturday. But, you know, I think a lot of fans were upset with Howard's performance at times last year. You know, other than that almost howler he had against Sporting Kansas City with the Roger Espinosa chip that went off the bar and out for a goal kick, he hasn't had a whole lot of big howlers. You know, one of my favorite Teddy Roosevelt quotes is, do what you can with what you have where you are. And I feel like that's what Tim Howard's doing. And short of Stefan Fry, I don't know that there'd be another goalkeeper in MLS right now who you could plop into, have the exact same situations as Tim Howard, and have the Rapids be noticeably better in terms of points or goals against or standings whatsoever. You know, Howard's doing everything he can. It's not really his fault when he's got to defend the near post on a, you know, a 2v1 with one defender coming back, and the pass gets through him because it was because of how it was hit, And then it was, you know, and then it's an open net for the striker to come in. It's not his fault that two of his defenders put in own goals. It's not his fault that, you know, they're getting handballs called against them. You should not expect a goalkeeper to stop a whole bunch of PKs. You know, there's only so much he can do with the circumstances he has. You would expect a goalkeeper to make the passes they or make the saves that they should, and then take away some of the goals that you would expect. You know, he had one of those against Chicago Fire on Saturday. If you ask me, that would have been the fifth goal for them. And if you expect a goalie, if a goalie gives up five goals in a game and they're all on 2-on-0s where he's got a breakaway to face against, then there's bigger issues elsewhere. You know, Tim Howard hasn't been perfect, but there's a lot other bigger leaky holes in this burgundy wall that need to get plugged before you deal about the one little spigot on the end that is, you know, Tim Howard's pinky finger in diameter.
I'll add one more thing, Matt, which is way back to a comment you made about paying three managers at the same time, potentially. We're not really sure. I just want to drop a hot rumor. We're not really sure about the exact situation with Pablo Mastroeni's contract. There are two options and an unbelievably impossible third possibility with what could have happened. Possibility one is his contract was a 3-year deal through 2019 and the team had to honor it. Possibility two is that he had a release clause with a lump sum payment.
They would have been paid all out in 2017 when he was fired.
Right, probably, or at the end of 2017 or something like that. But that's logical, which means that Mastroeni's off the books, but the money's still a factor, which is we already paid for our last coach. And the third possibility is that Pablo Mastroeni and his agent signed an unguaranteed contract, which is hypothetically possible, but completely improbable. Like nobody in their right mind would sign a soccer manager contract that didn't have a guarantee, because managers take the brunt for the poor play of their teams, and you have to protect yourself. Only if his agent was hopped up on nitrous oxide and Quaaludes would he have signed that deal. So I don't think that that's likely. The last thing I'll say is this. This is a hot rumor that is floating around on Colorado Rapids discussion group. And I'm not even going to name the source of it because I feel uncomfortable about the source by which that person probably got the information. But this person is quoted as saying that Pablo Mastroeni was on a $400,000 deal and that Coach Anthony Hudson is on a $750,000 deal. And then he goes on to elaborate that he doesn't think that Kroenke Sports Enterprises would ever go into a situation where they are paying their two coaches $1 million and have to go out and buy a third. I'm not so sure, right? You know, I think when you're looking at fans who are deciding whether or not to sign up for another year of season tickets, when you're looking at fans wondering whether this team is for real or whether they're just a joke, you know, the third or fourth team to add to the color combination that is burgundy and blue in the Kroenke Sports Enterprises panoply, filler for altitude at the late hours when you don't really have anything else going on. Like, that's where this team is trending if you don't do something to change it. You know, like, the team got going in the right direction after they fired Pablo Mastroeni because folks felt like things were changes were being made, and that the ownership
hashtag the Rapids way, promises were made, we're going to be better.
Right, things are going to change and things are going to be better. And so far, changes were made, but they didn't work out. So if you're going to say, like, well, we've been doing this for 2 years and it's not working, but we're going to keep doing it, you're just risking alienating your fan base. And I don't think ownership wants to do that. So
in any case, all right, shall we move on, Mark?
That's a lot of big things, Matt. But yeah, they were big things because it's kind of, I think we've started to reach the point where we're crossing the Rubicon, as it were. Of like, we can no longer say that this team's poor performance is just poor performance, but they're surely going to turn it around. We're actually getting to the point where it's like, maybe they won't turn it around, and maybe this is bad soccer, and maybe this is, we're trapped in a permanent hellscape of bad soccerdom.
Listeners, we are currently 8/34 through the Colorado Rapids season. Reduces down to 4/17. The Colorado Rapids have 2 points off of no wins, 6 losses, and 2 draws. It's been like that for a couple of weeks now. And after this week, with a couple of winless teams in MLS getting a couple wins, and then some other teams who were undefeated getting losses as well, the Rapids are now the last team in MLS who are without a win. They are currently 12th in the Western Conference with 2 points right at the bottom there with a negative 11 goal differential. That is the worst goal differential by far in MLS so far, Eastern Conference or Western Conference. This coming Saturday at, I believe, 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Yes, 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. They will be making their first ever appearance at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, taking on 2018 MLS Cup champion Atlanta United FC, who are a very, very good team on paper, but are also off to a very, very poor start this season. They are bottom of the Eastern Conference at 12. They have 5 points out of 6 games played, 1 win, 3 losses, and 2 draws. That one win did come a couple weeks ago in a game at New England Revolution, and they have a -3 goal differential. Coming off of when we talked about them last year, Mark, Tata Martino is out. In is Frank DeBoer, and there's a lot of very, very bad mojo going on around him. Some of the cultural issues that might be going on in the locker room, and then just all of his tinkering and not really understanding what he has and trying to fit a lot of square pegs into a lot of round holes. The roster, relatively the same with the exception of Miguel Amarone and Greg Garza, who were transferred out. Miguel Amarone went to Newcastle United, came up with a hamstring injury last weekend, Mark. He's probably out for the rest of the Premier League season. And then Greg Garza, who is normally their outside back, wing back for them, is now on to expansion side FC Cincinnati. Their back line boasts Gonzalez Pires, Michael Parkhurst, longtime MLS player, who is their captain, Miles Robinson, their first ever expansion draft or super draft pick, has been playing very, very well the last couple weeks at center back. Breck Shea is kind of being crazy and aloof. Breck Shea at the left back position. Brad Guzan is their goalkeeper. In the midfield, they've got Jonathan Nagbe, Eric Rometty, former Rapids player, hashtag Rapids Thug Life, Big Red Jeff Laurentiewicz. And then their front attack has Julian Gressel, who destroyed Edgar Castillo last year, Dosa Martinez, reigning Golden Boot champion, and the enigma that is Ezequiel Barco. We'll get to Know Thy Enemy in a little bit, Mark. Mark, what do you see in Atlanta United? What do you see in this game on Saturday?
They haven't started very well, like you said. And Frank DeBoer has come out possibly a little bit too defensively, or at least it's not really so much defensive, although that's his reputation. It's really more that it's too static. The movement is this. Matt Doyle did a really good piece about what they aren't doing well on MLSsoccer.com, so you should go check that out. But like, they're very stiff. There's not a lot of good off the ball movement. Except with the exception of Joseph Martinez making the big runs, which he's still doing. He's just making them in slightly different channels than he used to. But that's, I think, the terrifying thing for me is that even with, Atlanta not playing fluidly and dangerously like they used to, they still have talent at every position on the field that's better than what Colorado has. And they should be able to cause problems, against the Colorado Rapids back line. There is one, like, slight sliver of possibility, which is that, I was told that Court Ford has been starting to train with the team. Maybe he's just been running on the side, but maybe he's training with the team. And that's the thing that you can tell me more about if you get to training this week, Matt. I think the odds that he's ready for this week are low. But like, what if Court Ford comes back, and what if Court Ford has a great game? You know, like that would be a good way to kind of come back in. But I don't know. I don't know. I think, you know, Ezequiel Barco had his first really great goal, as an MLS player this past week.
with that curler that was the goal of the week from last week, I think. Pity Martinez hasn't really struck on all cylinders yet, but when he does, he does. And then, you know, their center backs, at, Gonzalez Pires, fronted by Jeff Lorenowitz, Julian Gressel coming around to the outside. I mean, it's a formidable lineup, and I don't see Colorado getting a win on the road here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, the talent hasn't played up to the sum of their parts this year at all, but they're still really talented. And there's a lot of individual matchups in this one that you would think on the day do not favor the Colorado Rapids. And look, at the end of the day, they've got Joseph Martinez, who, you know, was a terror the last two times that these teams played, you know, first at Bobby Dodd Stadium, and then, you know, last year, certainly, you know, at DSG Park. So, you know, you could tell me right now that the Rapids, just in terms of head-to-head matchups, are going to win 10 of the 11 on the field. And I'm going to ask, is the 11th one, you know, one of the center backs against Joseph Martinez? And if you would say yes to that, I'm not sure I have any confidence the Rapids are getting more than a squeaky bum time 2-2 draw, maybe, if Kai Kamara is able to dunk on, you know, Brad Guzan and Miles Robinson in two, you know, completely independent plays. You know, the Rapids, with where they are at this point, you know, are just such a shell of what, you know, of what they want to be, that they could dominate every single position on the field but Joseph Martinez versus center back. And I would still think that Joseph Martinez will find a way to get two or three goals such that the Rapids ultimately come out losing.
I was gonna say to that, like, if I hated myself, Matt, I would pick Joseph Martinez on my fantasy team this week.
I've seriously been doing that. I've been picking clean sheets for the Rapids opponents and then the Rapids attacking opponents as well.
I can't do that to myself. I have always, because I just can't watch a team and have any secret glimmer in my heart that my own team loses. So I never pick either of the teams, the Rapids or the team that the Rapids are playing against, just because I can't enjoy it.
I was in last place for a couple of weeks in the MLS Fantasy Boss Experts League, and that was after losing in week one to Andrew Wiebe, which is, I guess, the equivalent of, like, Tom Brady, like, losing to the Cleveland Browns of, like, the last two or, like, not recently, but, like, Cleveland Browns two or three years ago, like, beating Tom Brady in Foxborough. So, at this point, Mark, my pride's on the line, and I need points. And if that means me being snarky and cynical towards the Colorado Rapids, you know, so be it.
Yep.
All right, listeners, with that, we will head on to, we'll be right back. We will head on to Know Thy Enemy, where I talk with Kevin and Tim from Home Before Dark. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We've got a special Know Thy Enemy segment. We'll be previewing the Rapids' upcoming game this Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium against Atlanta United FC, the defending MLS Cup champions. To do that, I've brought in the guys over at Home Before Dark. Gentlemen, why don't you introduce yourselves, and in the spirit of podcasts having weird, non-soccer obvious names, why don't you explain what the origin of Home Before Dark is?
Well, let's set expectations low, first and foremost. I'm so sick of hearing defending MLS champs. It's just salt in the wound at this point. Six games in, bottom of the Eastern. It's terrible. I hate it. I love that we won the cup. Don't get me wrong.
You're so pessimistic.
I hate the moniker. I'm Kevin.
I'm Tim.
And, so Home Before Dark started up a while back, just talking. We actually started out as Banter Podcast, and actually would
which
be a
would,
little
much better soccer podcast name.
Yeah,
but yeah,
and we ended up changing it up. We used to just talk about video games, music, stuff that we were doing, shows we were going to, and then the thought was to brand it with something that harkened back to those experiences you had as a kid. And the last thing your mom would say whenever you ran out the house was be home before dark. And it was always just sort of that, call to arms by your mom and with a community and those moments in between whenever you walked out of the door down the street to hang out with your buddies and the time that you got back home. So.
Okay. Awesome stuff. I, from this moment forth, I will not bring up the defending MLS Cup champions. However, I will say, I will say that you merely adopted the suckage. Rapids fans in our current iteration, you know, have definitely, you know, we're have been born in the darkness and are molded by it and have completely accepted the nihilism that is the 2019 MLS season. But let's start with some big picture stuff, guys. You know, obviously there were a lot of changes this past offseason. There's a lot of turmoil around the current state of Frank DeBoer and some of his tinkering. Some of that tinkering led to a win at New England Revolution. Some of them led to a rather lackluster loss this past week at FC Dallas. What's the current state of Frank DeBoer's headspace and some of the players and just how they're approaching trying to be square pegs fitting into round holes that he wants the team to be?
If his headspace is anywhere near where the majority of the fan base, at least the echo chamber that is on Twitter, their heads are, we're screwed. But I think he's probably fine at this point. I think so.
I think I'd be much more concerned had Atlanta come out and not even tried to compete this past weekend. I think the fact that Atlanta consistently plays and creates more and more opportunities week in and week out is indicative of where that locker room is under his leadership.
Listen, he's got to have a better headspace right now than he did getting fired 7 games or 6 games into it, whatever it was at Crystal Palace, because at least right now the ownership group in the front office have invested more time in him than his previous 2 jobs combined, I believe. So, but to that point, I think that he's been dealt kind of a hard card, a hard set of cards, a hard hand, and part of that is expectations levied by the fans, by still the sheen and the newness of this team around the city. In that 2 years in, we won MLS Cup. 1 year in, we were in the playoffs and got bounced early by our expectations. And he's coming in losing the best player in the probably in the league last year, right? Miguel Amarone. And despite not winning the MVP, but you lose him. You have a really weird hand of injuries, a transfer of Greg Garza, which is turning out to be absolutely devastating for this team right now, I think.
Devastating, but you saw that Greg Garza got injured as soon as he left.
I know, so. It's true. But from a performance standpoint, what we had last year in Greg Garza last year, it's just a weird set of circumstances. I think that personally he's dealing with it kind of well. I know he's made some weird post-game remarks and I think as long as he's kind of keeping the booze out of his head that he's seeing or hearing on the way out of the field in a couple of these games, which we absolutely don't condone.
Was that a pun on like all the beer showers? He's just trying to keep this air?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's weird. I think that he's doing a great job right now. You see that in the improvements that he's been making. I think the team has been making statistically and just the ability to adapt to his play style in kind of a marriage between last year's play style in some regards and then in his play style coming in.
I guess off of that point, you know, even with the results not going Atlanta's way, are you seeing incremental improvement from game to game where you think this is improving?
Absolutely. I think if you look at the chances created coming off of the DC United game and FC Cincinnati game, I think we had a total of 4 chances created over 2 games or something like that to, what was it, 10 this past weekend against Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, week after week, we're getting better and more consistent in our run of play. Obviously, I think the story is more involved and more in depth than just the scoreline at the end of the game. And that's not even to talk about the whole experience and diatribe that I went on last week on Twitter, but about the game in general and the run of play up until the final whistle, Atlanta United seems to be on a positive trend in what they're doing. And you hope that the rest of those things will start to click and fall into places. Players get healthy, and players that maybe miss some opportunities that they capitalize on 9 times out of 10 start to actually do so in future.
Yeah, listen, I mean, Ezequiel Barco, he's a couple inches off from making this a three point victory for us.
And Joseph Martinez gets
a shift in the rankings with still a game in hand. I think, again, I mean, the chances being created are the big thing, because that was the criticism at the beginning of the year was, oh, great, you're winning possession, but you're not winning you're not shooting, you're not creating chances. But now it's a combination of both. I think it's just a matter of those opportunities just going into the back of the net at some point.
And that has nothing to do with Frank DeBoer. And that was one of his post game quotes was, I can't put the ball in the goal, basically. Like that, you guys have to do that. That's for you guys to do. And he's, I feel like he's managed this team and the formation is starting to click and jive in a certain way. Some question marks still on defense and other areas, but overall, I'm very optimistic on the way things are headed.
Really good insight on that, guys. The one player maybe you didn't mention on the attacking side who, you know, has had a interesting and up and down season so far has been Hector Villalba. You know, he was on the bench to start. You know, he's kind of been, you know, trying to work his way, at least from afar, I see just trying to get on the field. And that's a little bit puzzling just from the standpoint of him being a very good attacking option on a team that was having offensive struggles. How's he doing at this moment? You know, he did get the start on Saturday.
It's weird. Kevin likes to think of Tito, or as you referred to him by his government name, Hector Villalba. Kevin likes to think of him and Dan, our other co-host, likes to think of him as a better power sub, super sub coming in. I think that he gets better as the game goes on, and I think that he has kind of the endurance and the pace to really trouble and bother a defense as the game wears on. He didn't have the best game on Saturday. I don't think he had a bad game by any stretch. I think he was just lacking in latching onto things. But I mean, in the New England game, I think he and Barco were the two difference makers in that game. And I think it's weird because you bring in a record signing in Petey Martinez, who's seemingly going to play in the position that you have Tito in right now. You have Gressel, who for the life of him can't have an outing bad enough or back-to-back outings bad enough to be benched, and then you're left trying to figure out who to sit. And I think Tito, just because of probably the money and maybe the formation, might be the odd man out, because he's not necessarily one to whip crosses in from the left side. He's more cut in and catch them off guard. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest struggle with Tito right now is where he fits at in this lineup. Obviously, he's got a starting position right now, but it's not in a natural position with him on the left wing. So he did find some success against New England, as Tim mentioned, but we saw that drop off a little bit against Dallas. So I'll be interested to see if that changes. We saw some interesting tactics late in the Dallas game this past weekend where we saw him and Gressel invert wingers from time to time. Gressel would shift over to the left and vice versa. So maybe we continue to see some of that and see some development based on that front. But yeah, it's been sort of one of those things of a champagne problem for Atlanta United, or so it seems on paper, of having these really talented players and depth pieces that you bring in as a super sub. But unfortunately, it's not really producing any results right now.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the back line. You've got Michael Parkhurst, who, if I remember, is still the captain and has been kind of moving back and forth between the right back position and the center back position. You've got Miles Robinson, the first ever super draft pick in the history of the club, growing into his own, and Breck Shea doing very Breck Shea things on the left back position. Where's the defense right now? And from the opposite side, how do you think that they go about trying to contain Kai Kamara on Saturday?
Defense for me is the biggest question mark in this lineup right now. Breck Shea is still getting used to how he interacts with LGP at times, it seems, as well as how he interacts with whatever wingers up top, whether it's Barco or Tito. We saw him link up really well with Tito against New England, but not so much against Dallas. And then there's oftentimes where he drifts too far to center versus staying out on the left wing and left wing back role as players are tracking back, and vice versa. You see LGP maybe getting pulled too far left of center and then having guys get by him. And so the whole defense has to shift to react to that. And that's ultimately what led to the first goal against Dallas this past weekend, is you see LGP take an errant slide that he ends up missing a little too far upfield. And you've got Breck Shea trying to cover his man on the left, and then you get Miles Robinson and Michael Parkhurst split on the back line. So Michael Parkhurst, we've had the conversation. I think that he obviously has a role on this team, and he's definitely a skilled player, but I think that the back line and the defense will be the one area that you'll see this lineup really change and evolve over time. As George Bello gets healthy, Mikey Ambrose gets healthy over on the left back, as Franco Escobar gets healthy over on right back, where we see these positions start to shift out and who may sit at times when the others are healthy.
Yeah, it's weird. You would think that, I don't know, from our standpoint, I mean, we talked about it during our weekly show. it seems like LGP is oddly kind of the weak link right now in the defense. In terms of a purely defensive standpoint, I feel like Breckshay is the easy guy to point out, but I think that if you replace, maybe you think differently, Kevin, but I think if you put Franco Escobar on right back as soon as he gets healthy and you put Michael Parkhurst in with Miles Robinson, Breckshay becomes less of an issue.
Yeah.
Because there's more coverage back there. LGP is just making uncharacteristic errors, or at least he's making those errors, and he's uncharacteristically unable to atone for those errors quickly enough to stop those goals.
We've seen LGP consistently try to put the game on his back whenever the defense feels pressured, and that was really evident in the FC Dallas game, where he was making a lot of errant fouls that were unnecessary and really aggressive challenges that didn't need to be made. So I think that shoring up that back line, and maybe it's some different positions or different players in those positions, that starts to settle down LGP. But I think ultimately that's what led to a lot of his success and stability in the long run over the past few years, is having a consistent back line that he could depend on, where he didn't feel like he had to be the world beater that he sometimes tends to try to be.
Good stuff, guys. This won't be the most exciting game for, you know, the MLS fan who's watching from a neutral perspective, but this will most probably be the last time that Brad Guzan and Tim Howard face each other in competition, and pending, you know, some last minute call up, or, you know, Tim Howard potentially getting, you know, a testimonial game with the U.S. national team, probably the last time they'll be together in a soccer sense, you know, either as teammates or as opponents. How's Brad Guzan's season going? And, you know, handicap maybe, you know, what that relationship or that interaction could look like between two guys who aren't part of the national team anymore, and two, you know, especially given that, you know, this will be, you know, Tim's last hurrah in his final season in professional soccer.
Listen, I mean, Tim Howard's a legend.
Absolutely.
I think it's, regardless of what you feel like he's done over the past 2 years, I know we talked about it, I think there's differing opinions on what he's meant to the woes that Colorado Rapids have seen so far. He's an absolute legend. Have nothing but love for Tim Howard, and same goes for Brad Guzan. And I feel like being able to watch those two on the field together is gonna make my heart pump really dark red blood for this country. And I think it'll be fun to see. It'll be a lot like Jon Snow fighting against the guy.
Stop.
The one guy with Goliath. Stop. It's Jon Snow versus Goliath.
Just stop.
No.
When he fought the dragons?
Yeah, exactly.
I apologize to all Game of Thrones listeners for Tim's, you know, completely muffing of the stats and everything.
His bastardization of the Bastard Bowl?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Or I guess almost, like, possibly confusing that with Clegane Bowl as well, since he's playing the giant.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah. The Battle of the Bald Bowl.
No, it is the Battle of the Bulge.
Battle of the Bald Bulge.
No, this is Battle of the Bulge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Battle of the Power Balls?
Whenever Jon Snow showed up on the beaches of Normandy, remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that episode?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, it'll be fun to see there. In terms of Brad Guzan's performance, we have a running joke on the show that's gotten really old to the point we don't even say it anymore, where we had that stopgap, Alec Cann, local kid, who actually played really well for us, for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of the season before Brad Guzan came in the first season. We like to joke around about whether or not you want to see Alec Cann versus Brad Guzan, but in the past 2.5 years, I mean, or I guess at this point 2 years, Brad Guzan has been, he's been great. I don't really have a whole lot bad to say about his distribution is a little lacking at times, but you could say that about 95% of the goalies in MLS. I think that from a quality standpoint relative to the rest of the league, I don't know that we can hope for much better. I mean, you have Andre Blake and Zach Steffen and Bill Hamid, and then you have Brad Guzan. I think that's,
I agree.
We're lucky to have him, the caliber of player he is. And I mean, he still has a hit. If Tim Howard is any indication, Brad Guzan still has a solid, you know, 15 more years left in him. I just don't know if he can grow the beard.
Yeah,
that'd be weird.
It would be. It'd be all neck, probably.
I can't remember seeing Brad Guzan with any form of facial hair. They both, you know, started having receding hairlines pretty solidly, that I don't have conscious memories of watching either of them, when they still had, you know, hair on the top of their head. Hey. But, you know, Tim's been doing the beard, you know, going back to the Everton and the Manchester United days.
Yep. I know that feel. I had the same problems.
Okay. Last big question that I have for you guys. Rapids fans are always very, very excited to see their former players, especially when it's one who played all the way back in 2010 when they won their first MLS Cup. Jeff Lorenowitz, Big Red, starting regularly as the holding midfielder. And at times he was a center back last year. How's Jeff Lorenowitz's season going so far, and where do you expect him to line up, and what's he going to do on Saturday?
I feel like Jeff's been fine. The question on whether or not he plays Saturday is whether or not Eric Rometty's healthy and out of concussion protocol. I don't know what the length of time is with that. He took a pretty bad knock against New England. If Rometty's healthy, we may see Jeff sit, not because of poor play per se, but just because you have Eric Rometty and Darlington Nagbe in the midfield. And Eric Rometty, I think, may be a player that gives LGP a little bit more confidence that you've got somebody that is a bulldogging midfielder that can make some of those more aggressive challenges so that LGP isn't taking the brunt of all of them. So I think overall, though, Jeff Lorenowitz has been everything that you expect him to be. There's not been any drop off in quality or expectations for him this season, any more so than there has been out of Michael Parkhurst. Obviously, you maybe see them and get a tough beat from time to time, but they've been tried and true and really consistent overall so far this season, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I think Jeff Lorenowitz, whenever he's been on the pitch, has been far from our biggest concern. And I think he's always consistent. He's been one of our favorite players on the show over the past.
We got a framed, signed picture by him right there.
Yeah.
What's nice, funny, guys.
We get to hold this, candle pretty high. I think we were the first, like, legit sit down media. We're not legit media, but.
Oh,
like,
we are legit.
It was like the first time, to my knowledge, what somebody said was like the first time he sat down and done like a full interview, last year when we did a meet and greet, player meet and greet with him, a Heineken, one of those player obligations.
Yeah.
It was an obligation. We didn't talk him into it.
We just snaked our way into it.
Okay, good stuff. Well, if you guys ever get him back on the show, I would say if you want a good laugh and, you know, maybe some fun little war stories in a Robert Baratheon tone, I would definitely encourage you to ask him about the 2010 season, his time in Colorado, and in particular, name drop Rapids Thug Life, and you'll probably get a nice little smirk out of him and some good stories about him and Pablo Mastroianni back in the day.
I like it. I like it.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, Kevin, Tim, thank you very much for joining us. You know, for Rapids listeners who want to learn more about what you guys have to say about Atlanta, where can they find you?
It's pretty easy. You just go to iTunes, search Atlanta United. It's the first one that pops up.
Or if MLS is more your thing, I think it's still like top five.
Yeah, Humble Brags. No, you can find us at Home Before Dark on Twitter. It's before spelled B and the number 4, and Home Before Dark wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, every podcatcher.
All right, and then we were talking a little bit earlier when I was recording, you know, Offsides Trap with you guys. For any Rapids listeners who are potentially traveling to the game, where would you recommend they hit up when they're in Atlanta?
Magic Ooh. City to start.
Please, that is not the official opinion of Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red, just so we're clear.
Okay. Claremont Lounge, then. Or
yeah, that's a good
club.
One. Yeah, that's a good one.
No, for real. Let's see, around that area, I mean, the Gulch, I mean, really.
That's where everything's at.
Game time. I mean, we really don't have a big mixed use facility out there yet. I mean, it's coming in the next like year or two. But for now, we have a huge sunken in parking lot, that is right next to the stadium that everybody goes and tailgates.
Where all the supporters groups go. It's, you don't have to be a member to participate in all the tailgates. They typically charge a flat fee for all you can eat and drink. Obviously if you're drinking 21 or older. But it's all family friendly affair. If you don't want to get involved with the more public tailgates, the Centennial Olympic Park isn't too far of a walk from there, which is where more of the touristy areas are, like the aquarium and Coke Museum and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's some restaurants and things
over
there.
A couple of the restaurants that we could recommend. If you guys are anywhere in like the Northwest Atlanta area and Smyrna, Vinings area, there's a barbecue place that I haven't had in so long.
Heirloom Barbecue.
Heirloom Market Barbecue. It is, I think, Korean folks making Southern barbecue, and the fusion is just incredible.
You hear from, oh, so many spices.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible.
If you're around, look up Krog Street Market, Pond City Market. There's a lot of really cool collective buildings that Atlanta's developed over the years of old factory buildings that have been this collective of restaurants and shops now that have been overhauled with a lot of different piecemealed restaurants throughout the buildings with a good variety of food and stuff like that. But if you're tailgating, be sure to go down to the Gulch afterwards, stop by Waffle House, sober up a little bit.
Save a little room for what, $1.75 hot dogs now?
I think it's down to that, yeah.
Yeah, in the stadium, now that we're doing...
Oh man, those are not KSC prices at all.
We had $2 hot dogs last year, and they're like, okay.
I think they're $1.50 now.
Yeah, they're going cashless now, so yeah. They decided, since we're gonna inconvenience people, which I don't see as an inconvenience at all, we're gonna discount the food even further.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's great.
Alrighty then. Well, Kevin, Tim, thank you very much for joining the Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. You know, we look forward to seeing the Rapids taking on Atlanta in their first visit to Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday. Listeners, we'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name's Matt Pollard. Thank you again to Kevin and Tim from Home Before Dark talking about the Atlanta side of things with us on Know Thy Enemy. Mark, it's time for predictions. Give me a score line and how you see Saturday shaking down at the MBS.
I think 2-0 is a good likelihood for Atlanta to beat the Rapids. It's going to be very difficult for Colorado to possess the ball and go forward against Atlanta with all of the weapons they have and with their ability to move the ball very well, especially at home. I'm also very concerned about the way Anthony Hudson approaches away games. It's a thing that I've started to really worry about after last season, but this season even more so, because I think they've lost 3 road games. Maybe it's 4 now with the game against Chicago. I'm losing track of the losses, Matt. But we don't come out differently on the road than we do at home. And we don't – it's 4, Matt's pointing. It's 4 road losses. We don't come out differently on the road than we do at home. We're not more pragmatic. We're not more careful. And I think that is not going to work in Atlanta.
No, I agree with you. I'll take 2-1 in this one, just because there's so many issues going on, particularly with LGP on the Atlanta side, and Atlanta's been really, really prone to counterattacks and then also set piece defending. To me, that means at some point something's going to go right, and Keegan Rosenberry is going to be able to overlap, or the Rapids are just going to win, you know, X plus one corners necessary, such that Kai Kamara is going to be able to get one. I think it'll be a token goal, or, you know, here's the icing on the top of your turd pie, so to speak. But I'll take 2-1 to Atlanta. I think the Rapids are set up to be slump busters SC in this one. And, Atlanta's going to go home feeling good about themselves, just as, you know, the Rapids, you know, flattered the Chicago Fire attack last week. And I like Joseph Martinez to get one. I won't say who the other one comes from. It could be Barco. You know, we'll see whether or not Hector Villalba ends up, getting a goal as well. And Julian Gressel is going to be in a position to be really, really attacking. I think this comes down to, can the fullbacks get it done on both sides of the ball? And I really have no idea where Anthony Hudson's going to turn in terms of replacing what Jack Price has been from a holding midfielder standpoint. Maybe you move Benny Fellhaber back and then start Cole Bassett. But, you know, the more I look through all of the options there, none of them really excite me. If Rapids, you know, are going to get anything from this game, it's just going to be by pure effort mucking up things in the middle and then trying to exploit single opportunities on the wing. And I still don't like those matchups, just given the talent that Atlanta's has and the level of desperation they're at, given what expectations were for them this season under Frank DeBoer. With that, Mark, let's head to Ask HDHL. We got a bunch of really, really good ones this week, listeners, but Mark's really, really tired, and some of them are, with all due respect, a little bit repetitive or kind of overlapping, so I'll respond to all the ones we don't get to here on Twitter, but it's also been a couple regulars, and we like to give people who haven't talked to us in a while or, first-timers a good little shout. So I believe this is our first one of the calendar year from Bill from Missouri. So, Bill, thank you for the question. So Bill says, okay, hashtag AskHDHL, at Rapids96podcast, at soccer_rabbi. Do the Rapids qualify as a laughingstock? He's using air quotes there. And then if yes, then my second question is, does anybody above Porrick Smith's pay grade, A, care that the Rapids are a laughingstock, or B, know the first thing about fixing the laughingstock status? Mark, are the Rapids a laughingstock, and who and what can be done about it?
Huh. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, a laughingstock is when everyone in the league assumes that you're free points. That, you know, you're coming to town means that their team is going to win, which I think everybody does. A laughingstock is a team where, the rate of losses or the frequency of losses or the recurrence of losses is an annual thing, right? You can count on the Rapids to muck it up because they do every year. There's no faith, from Rapids fans, from Major League Soccer pundits. Like, nobody thinks this team is legitimate or for real. Like, I know more people on Twitter who are quote unquote former supporters or former season ticket holders than I know current season ticket holders. I'm not exaggerating. That's like a legit, that's a straightforward statement. And I have some good friends who are, you know, still hardcore fans, but I, you know, like, I know a lot of people who are like, oh, why would I support that team? You know, they're never going to be good. Like, there's almost too much pain for it to be laughing, to be a laughing stock. Like, they're not comical enough. Like, they're inept, but they're not like Washington Generals inept, you know? It's not an enjoyable inept, but that's, I guess, like splitting hairs. Right now, yeah, they're a laughing stock. Two seasons and three specific streaks of eight or more losses or winless stretches. That's pretty traumatically, catastrophically bad.
No, I agree with you. I think they're a laughing stock for me, or I would phrase it differently. I go back to an interview, I want to say right before in the 2014 preseason. So between the 2013 and the 2014 season, Extra Time Radio had Taylor Twellman on for them, and they were just doing a round table about the league, just general happenings and everything. They made sure to cover everything so that it wasn't just all talking about one team going into the preseason. And they got to the Rapids, and like effectively Taylor Twellman said something to the effect of, like, the effect of, you know, what are the Rapids doing? And that was, you know, in the middle of them not having a coach and interviewing Pablo Mastroianni 3 to 4 times and wondering, you know, who's really pulling the strings with the offseason moves they were making and the expand or and the super draft, and nobody really had any good answers. And so, like, that's where I'm at the point of, I just, you know, at this point, like, what are you doing? Like, how inept do you have to be as bad as you are right now? Is it necessarily laughable? No, but I would use the word pathetic. I would use the word inept to describe it. I would use, I would phrase it as, this is something that we have seen. The losses and how they lose feel inevitable. I would say it's very much like a Greek tragedy, and it's something to expect week after week after week, and there's no indication that anything's going to change anytime soon. So in that respect, my answer to your first question, Bill from Missouri, is yes. To the second one, I think that if I were to ask Warwick Smith this question straight up, I think he would say that he doesn't believe that they're a laughing stock, and he thinks that they're still building. I think some of that has to be built on. I think any acknowledgement of failure is, admitting fault in the roster building of this team or in him going about choosing hiring Anthony Hudson as a head coach, and that is going to be an acknowledgement of his failures rather than trying to cherry pick some things that are going on positively or just, you know, drinking the burgundy Kool-Aid to say that just wait until we have the winter transfer window in 2020 and are able to bring in a DP number 9 and a DP number 10, and then everything's going to be okay. And I think we're at the point, Mark, where, you know, it's going to have to be Sebastian Giovinco and Robbie Keane level signings for this team to be able to score 4 goals a game to make up for all of the issues that you have on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't have any faith that the Rapids have, one, the funds to do that, B, the ability to do that, and C, the actual ability to execute it once those players are actually signed and convincing them to join hashtag the Rapids way. And so ultimately, like, for somebody else to care or be in a position to go about changing things, I think at the end of the day, it's going to have to come from somebody with the last name Kroenke, and there's going to have to be a level of, there's going to have to be them caring, knowing that they're about to open up, you know, a brand new stadium in Inglewood, California for their NFL team that's going to bring in a whole bunch of other secondary revenue that's going to be fantastic for them, knowing that the Avalanche are into the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs and are going to sell out playoff games, and knowing that the Nuggets are, you know, in an okay position, I believe tied 2-2 as of right now with the San Antonio Spurs, and the Rapids are just an afterthought at this point. So somebody's going to have to care. With somebody with the last name Kroenke is going to have to care, and they're going to have to care to the point of, let's throw more money at this dumpster fire in order for it to get better, knowing that it's going to have to take more time and potentially more money, and we're going to have to lose more money in 2019 than in previous years in order for it to get better. And I don't know that either of those things independently or collectively are true. And in that, I feel like, you know, it's just, it's a Greek tragedy where every single week we're just watching the exact same thing, and we know it's not going to change anytime soon. And just, this is the existence of the Colorado Rapids right now. And it's not fun to watch, and it's not getting better anytime soon. And in that, it is a miserable thing to behold from a soccer club standpoint.
Well said.
Anything else, Mark?
This was a depressing pod.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you get to bed. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard. Check out our individual written musings on the Rapids and MLS in general @TheDenverPost and Last Word on Soccer, respectively. Hit us up on the Twitterverse @Rapids96Podcast. And then you can email us your AskHTHLs that are longer than 280 characters @Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. If you like our work and want to give us money for it, hit us up at patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast and head on over to thedenverpost.com/HTHL, all lowercase on HTHL, for a special deal on the Denver Post. Thank you again to the guys over at Home Before Dark for joining us this week. Mark, we'll see you next week, where hopefully we're not talking about another Rapids loss and I'm only slightly jet lagged from watching Fulham FC take on the Bluebirds.
Have a great time.